Very good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the world of corporate communication. This is a class that you will have less lectures for than for other classes that you get for the introduction level courses, and that's because we've listened to you. We've asked previous year students what do they like in classes, and they said, first of all, put it all online. So all of the courses, all of the teaching that we have is going to be available online after the lectures are done. So if you overlap with other courses, no problem. Then the other thing some of you wanted is to be able to do the lectures or the exam in two different languages, in Finnish or English. That's also possible. So Matthias will give you some ideas at the end of the class how that is done. And the third thing that we thought you might like about this course is that you see a lot of new faces. Almost every single time there is somebody else or something new coming up from a different angle, all from the same topic and the same theme. And also, we have in the summer, last summer, when you guys were traveling or studying or packing to move here, we have been around Finland with Kaisa and Matthias, who I'll introduce in a bit, and we have been filming all the top public relations and communication professionals and asking them about the role of communication, and we produce short videos that are available to you that you can also watch. But let's start with the topic. To introduce yourself to the neighbors you might not yet know, let's take 2 minutes and move yourself next to somebody so that you're not sitting alone, and tell them your name, your major, and if you know that stuff, move on to the important question. And the first question is, what is society like today? 2 minutes. Okay, thank you. I trust that you have introduced yourself and at least shared some of your ideas about society today. But let's do a little gallup. How many of you, when you were talking about society today, actually mentioned something that was rather negative? Okay, all right. How many of you, when you were talking about society today, thought about more positive things? Less of you, okay. And how many of you saw it as a mixture of both positive and negative? Okay, very interesting. The reason I am asking you this, to start thinking about this, is because when we change the way we communicate, it automatically changes society around us as well. In the book that is part of this course, Cornelis' Corporate Communication, he talks about the market. The market is anybody willing to exchange with you the businesses that you're providing, but that is also on the exchange level of business. When we talk about society, we talk a bit broader. And I wanted to do this introduction so that we start with society on the large scale. There are different things when we think about how to describe the society. Some of the pictures that I put up there are key points to how you would approach this. First of all, it's the black swan. This is from Nassim Taleb's book, The Black Swan. And he argues that in this society, it's impossible to predict what will happen because all the networks and the environments that we live in, they're so interconnected that we don't necessarily know what activates issues and what activates activists to start opposing something or start being for and supporting something. I trust that somebody is doing renovations upstairs, and this is providing us with the beautiful soundtrack. A very good illustration of the black swan society, because we don't know that somebody will be working up there and doing the noises that are unpredictable. Other things that when we think about when we are looking at society today is risk. The whole notion of building a lot of things, building organizations, building communication around the war, around the questions and insecurities and danger and fear that people might have of issues. And hence, when we are thinking about organizations, it is often addressing how does the organization respond to what's going on around, and how can the organization preactively start taking a stand about issues that matter to their public, such as potential clients or the employees. Some sociologists today talk also about foam society, that the society where we are today is more like, dishwashing foam. White, fluffy stuff made up of tiny little bubbles. And each one of you has your own bubble. You are in your own media bubble where you select, or seemingly select, the favorite streams and feeds you get from your friends or the brands you like or the news media that you follow. And you think you're in control of your bubble. But actually, your bubble is very transparent. And anything you pull in can be recorded and traced where it's coming from and how it's influenced. And the most important thing about this foam society is whatever happens to one of the bubbles automatically spreads to the rest of the bubbles. There is no isolation where you can keep a single event in one place. And if there is poison being poured into the foam, it spreads all over the whole network of the whole society. This is the black swan demonstrated, I think. Power saving mode. I think we will be able to resurrect that. No, we won't. So Matthias to the rescue. Let's hope so. At this point, I would actually like to introduce you guys to the crew of this class. I promise you that we are bringing up all the people that you need to know and that have the best knowledge of the topic. And Kaisa, would you stand up as well? So the crew for this basic studies course is Matthias Lievonen and Kaisa Pekkala. Matthias knows all about getting in research money and big grants. He's working with the biggest companies in Finland on content marketing and negative stakeholder engagement at the moment. And Kaisa, we have stolen from Kone, the big elevator company in Finland. She was used to do strategy there. So she knows all about big corporations and how they function in practice. And they will be working with you throughout the course. And towards the end of this course, we'll also get Matthias to give you some details of how you pass this class and how you get really good grades in this class. Okay, thanks. So what kind of society is this then? Some suggest that this is a postmodern society. What happens in a postmodern environment? Everything can be questioned. There is no final answer or this is our statement. But in the real case, whatever you put up might be amended later, or better information when it's available, it's added to it. But there is no such thing as being done or being having a final answer, and nobody can anyway fix that anymore or change that. So the thing that organizations are facing in this postmodern environment is the fact that whatever they do, it will be questioned. And this is something difficult because many organizations are used to the fact that if they do a good job, if they have high quality, if they have good products, then everything should be fine. But this is no longer the environment because it's so dynamic and changing. Another point that we picked up in this picture is reputation. So there's this little guy that you may not be able to read under the question mark that says, I can't explain it, I just have a funny feeling that I'm being ghouled. And this is what's happening to organizations all the time. Their reputation, their record of past deeds, is being checked as we speak. And we talk about a reputation society where it's not as important what you actually do, but how it looks to the outside, what you did, or why you did it. And that means that instead of just doing a really good job and trying to communicate that is no longer enough. But you have to know the frame of reference and the different eyeglasses that the audiences, members, and the media have towards the organization to be able to answer those questions that they have arising. Another interesting look of this environment that we are in is that of support. So support economy. And that's, I think, very well in line with the business school strategy, because our strategy is to go for sustainable business, responsible business. And I think in the future, it's not enough just to do good products and hope everybody buys them and communicate well about it and be, you know, responsible and follow the laws. But I think you need to be able to support the audience members. You need to be able to support the customers, clients, stakeholders. And how do you support them? Not by pushing your product or your ideas and just waiting for them to respond to it, but figuring out what is going on with them in their life, in their daily chores, in their environment. What are the key questions that they are asking? And how can our brand or organization help them in their life? What kind of questions can we answer for them? What is the role of our product? And sometimes it means going beyond our core service just to keep the environment happy. But let's see. This is what's on the agenda today. And I promise that Matthias, at the end of this class, will give you some more information of how this is done. But we've put together for you guys the most wanted content and course design based on previous years' experiences. There will be lectures, there will be videos, there will be part of lectures, there will be a book, ta-da, brand new, out just 1 month, 2 months ago. There will be, is there 150 copies of this in the library?
Yeah.
But there will be 450 of you trying to borrow it at the same time. So if you want to be smart, you borrow it now and you read it and take some pictures with your cell phone, and then you won't be in panic mode when the exam is coming around. And because we have asked what you want, and one of the things that you wanted is that extra grade to be able to put your grade a bit higher with some extra work, we've come up with two fantastic little questionnaires that help us do research. They are totally tied to our research projects, and you can fill those up. That'll be a couple of hours of your life, and that will give you half a point for the final grade. So say your exam goes to a 2, but you did this exercise, these two questionnaires, you get a 2.5. And what does that mean? It always rounds up, so you end up getting a 3 out of the course. So it's very recommended extra that you get to do. But more of this, stay tuned until the end of the lecture. Let's go to the very beginning of where we start thinking about corporate communication. The traditional model of communication that we were talking about when Shannon and Weaver were talking about their model of society and talking about how messages are transformed is that you had, for example, a message you wanted to get to a certain group of people. So what you did is you packaged it into a really good container that you thought was the most useful, kind of like a syringe, you know, when you're giving somebody a vaccination, you pull it in, the message, you shove it in, and then you go looking for the source. Who am I going to put this message into? And then you find your ideal target audience, and then you just insert the message, and you see whether it worked. And if it did, good for you. If it didn't, you try to ask for feedback, and then you listen and you wait, okay, it's not working, what's wrong? And then you go back to your message and start making a new message and start lurking around for the new audiences. But this kind of thinking, this kind of one-way communication where an organization has a message and they shoot it out at a group is kind of expired. It would be the equivalent of us sitting here and this door banging open all of a sudden, in running this guy dressed up as a Santa Claus, throwing rubber boots at you. Okay? So you're like, okay, is this part of the class? What's the deal? And then before you even have any time to do anything, he runs out the door. And we're left with puzzled looks and rubber boots that don't really match, and we don't even have nice pair, and somebody finds a pair, but they are the wrong size. And this is how a lot of communication of corporations looks like to the stakeholders and to the customers. But you know what was behind that corporation's genius strategy? A lot of planning. They thought about, who is our target audience? And what's the best way to sell rubber boots? Well, we find out that, you know, the best way to get somebody to buy something is to give them a free sample. Okay, let's give free samples. So who are the influentials? Ah, it's the communication professionals of the future. Where do we find them? Ah, at the university. Where are they all in a very target-efficient way gathered in one little group? Ah, in a lecture. But, you know, they might be weird, you know, if we just come in with the boots. Let's dress up as something funny that makes everybody feel happy and Christmassy. So let's wear a Santa outfit. And everybody at the CEO suite thought, fantastic planning. And they come in, and they do this, and they go back, and they report the number of shoes thrown, the number of people reached in this room, the number of people you told about the shoes, and they think, good metrics, nice work. And they continue to go on with such fantastic plans. What they didn't realize is that you are gathered here for a totally different purpose. You are not here to try new samples. You are here to learn about corporate communication. This is not an issue arena for throwing around samples. This is an issue arena for learning. And how society today is organized is that people gather in different places, both online and offline, for specific purposes to discuss specific issues or topics. And if you are an organization or a brand and you want to take part in that discussion, you have to follow that discussion before you take part. You have to figure out what are the rules of engagement, what can you do there, what can you say there, who is allowed to talk there, what is the proper way to behave, how does it match our product. And it might even be that not all of the plans and not all of the fantastic issue arenas that we find match our product. It might even be that we end up realizing this product is outdated, we need to change the whole product. So communication as such doesn't always fix everything. You always have to start with the question, what does this group of people need? And how does our brand or organization answer that? Well, so the issue arenas are kind of like stages. They're like places where people are discussing things in the public. Now, the change from about 20 years ago is that maybe even 10 years ago, maybe even today, for some older generation style organization, is that they used to think that they can control the area, the arena, where the discussion is going. That if they put it on their own website, and that's just enough. Or they put it, try to get media to write an article about it, and then that's, you know, enough, and it's controlled. But in this issue arena world, the organizations and brands are just one voice. There's also everything else about their competitors. There's different publics. There's happy publics. There's sad publics. There's angry publics. There is disinterested publics. And it's a mixture of everybody who wants to be talking there. We've done some research about this, and we figured out what is the best way to get on one of those issue arenas. We've done some research on the topics of vaccine discussions. So when people talk about, is it okay to get vaccine in the like the swine flu or the bird flu or even the new HPV virus, which vaccine should be taken, and also on nuclear power. And we found that actually the earlier you get onto an arena, the more powerful you will be. What does that mean for the organizations? Instead of trying to figure out the channels of where you can push your information in your serine and vaccine the people with your message or throw the boots at the potential publics, you have to know your publics well enough to know what are they asking. What is the question that they need help for? How can our brand or product support them? And this is all about communication. Now, in the book, Cornelissen talks a lot about integrated approach. It means that all the things when we are building organizational identity or building organizational reputation or trying to get the trust of the stakeholders and keep the employees with a good identity, maintain the corporate identity, they have to be integrated. So it's not enough that somebody in the business starts talking about, let's get a good reputation with this group, and somebody starts thinking about, okay, let's start building a good internal identity among the employees, but all of those actions need to be worked together. There needs to be a core mission and vision for how this is done. What's the point? Why are we here? Some of the other questions and comments that we have, and I'll see if I can zoom into this beautifully. Some of the concepts that you will be facing in this class are here. I think one of the central ones is the one of legitimacy. You also have them in Finnish there, if in case you want to, you know, practice some Finnish, so you can show this off to your roommates tonight later on. Legitimacy is the most important, I think. And that is your license to exist. Does society accept your organizational brand? Are you allowed to be there? Is there more opposition to your brand and organization? Or is it something that is generally agreed that this is useful, it makes sense, it's helpful? Another concept, a very central concept, is that of an image and that of a reputation. Reputation we understand as something built over the deed, over a period of time of what the organization did. So it's a sum of the things that the organization has been doing. Image is more easily constructed in that sense. And identity is something that the organization relies on. So this is something that the organization is known for. So these are all intangible. They are not managed as a concrete tables and desks and IT networks and connections and phones. They are intangible. And that is what makes communication very challenging. We are dealing with capital that is intangible. But without this intangible capital, you have no business. Because if people don't trust you, they will never buy your product. If you don't have a good enough reputation, you will never fare up in competition. And if people don't really know what you stand for, it makes it even more difficult to come out of the cloud of competitors that you will find online today. So an integrated approach and the issue arenas where discussions take place. But let's start your wonderful conversation up again with your neighbor. So 2 minutes, how do organizations make employees and stakeholders do what they actually want? 2 minutes. Okay, let's hear it. So you can just put your hand up and we'll go through whatever you come up with. What makes, how do organizations make people do what they want? Just throw out stuff. Yes.
By providing what employees need, for example.
Okay, by providing what they need. Very, very good. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Money.
Money, exactly. Incentives, yes. They reward you, yeah. Very good. Involving them as part of the organization. Yes. Yes?
By training and something that inspires them.
Training and inspiring them. Very good points. Yes.
Transparent in their actions.
Interest what?
Transparent in their actions.
Transparent in their actions. Very important, especially in Western Europe, especially in Northern Europe, especially in the Finnish context. Yes. Oh, yes. Creating a need and then filling that need. The question is, how easy is it to create a need nowadays and try to fill it? That might be a bit more challenging, but yeah.
By adding some extra value and benefits for employees.
Yes.
And stakeholders.
Adding extra value and benefits for stakeholders. I'm repeating this because it's video, and some of you are watching it online later on. These are very good ways. What are the other ways? Yes?
An explanation of what the
clear explanation, yes. So internal communication as well as communication to also the outside stakeholders and customers. Yes? Very good. I was actually waiting for that one. In the Finnish-speaking class, that was the first people mentioned, fear and money. Here it was a bit different. But do you know that it's actually the best way to get people to do anything, fear? It's true. It's the most efficient and the quickest way to get people to obey. The only problem is that you have to up the level of fear every time because people get accustomed to it, and you have to follow through, otherwise they don't believe you anymore. So it's a non-sustainable strategy, but it's very efficient. Well, in this complex environment that we have, influencing others is not as easy as it used to be because there is less loyalty and there is less stable context where we are. So we might ask, who is an influencer in this kind of an environment? And this is stuff, by the way, that I'm teaching tomorrow at the Markkinoinnin viikko in Helsinki to the people who have graduated from this program and are working in industry. And I thought you guys might like the same stuff, so we'll see who gets a better response from you or from the marketing people tomorrow. But who is an influencer? Stuff that comes from Edelman Trust Barometer. So Edelman is one of the biggest communication agencies in the world, and they have been doing systematically research for over 10 years, and they follow trust globally. And it's an agency report, so it's non-academic in that sense, but they do it very systematically and thoroughly and with a fantastic budget, so it's also used as an academic source increasingly. And they say that the most credible source of any kind of influence in this kind of a crowded society is somebody you can relate to, a person like me. Now, whether they have to be exactly like you, no, not really. But if you have a question about a topic, a person like you, say, for example, your computer is coming up with a weird message time after time. Who is a person like you? Somebody who has the exact same message coming up on their computer. Or if you want to see if this class is full and want to know if you can still attend even if you're on the waiting list, a person like you is another person who is on the waiting list who has talked to the staff and found out the answer to that. So it doesn't mean that they have to be exactly like you, they just have to have a question similar to you. And when an organization is able to find a group of people who have together tried to answer a question but failed, and when an organization or brand is able to help them answer that question and answer that need, they have a really strong connection. And that is actually what we're aiming for. Increasingly, it is YouTubers and lifestyle influencers. Those people who are able to show you in a visual way what life should be about. What are your choices? How you should be living in an entertaining environment. And number three, those who help you with box turning. Are you familiar with the box turner concept? Okay, let me illustrate. Old consumer goes into the supermarket, pushing the stroll around, looks at the wall, there is oatmeal, and it says, more protein. Now with more protein. The old consumer picks the box up, congratulates themselves for putting more protein into their diet, puts it into the thing, takes it to the cashier, pays for it, and is happy. The new consumer is a box turner. What does that mean? They see the same oatmeal stuff there, now with more protein. What do? They box turn. They look what's on the other side. What do you mean it's more protein? And they turn around and they start reading. And they find out it's only 1% more protein than in the old version. And they decide, this is not a good buy. And they go for chickpeas or something else instead. So anybody who is able to help you with the box turning, looking at the message or the truth or the facts behind a claim, is influential. When you want to know the truth about a product, for example, you look to the box turners who've tried it. You look at those video bloggers who are using it or examining it, or you look at those people who are giving testimonies or grades. Which used to be quite trustworthy, but nowadays even Amazon and all those rating systems are totally flawed in the sense that they are manipulated greatly. So even with the nice reviews that you're reading, it might be that they're paid for. So I only trust only my own network of people that I really know. Whoever is in your stream and feed. So whether it is your friend or whether it is somebody who bought an advertising piece into your Facebook or Instagram or whatever streams that you have is influential because you are exposed to whatever they provide in that stream as a message to you. Whether you believe it or do it at that point, not necessarily, but it sticks with you that you've seen this somewhere. And when you have a theory of maximum exposure, when you are exposed to similar content over and over again in different streams, different environments, it starts looking at something that is kind of similar and something that is trustworthy because it sounds familiar to you, and then you end up choosing it in the end. So they're quite genius pushing themselves into your streams and feeds, the brands and organizations. Number 5 is anybody that is easily found. How many times have you Googled something and you actually come up with bad choices? None of it looks really good. You have like 10 million options, but they all suck. But you end up going with one of them because there's nothing else. It's influential because it's there. It's found. And this is a lot of the choices how they get made. Instead of doing heavy reliance and research and comparisons, no, you rely on the easy way of who recommends it and what do you find. What ships to who ships to Finland? That's, for example, one criteria of buying stuff. If they don't ship here, it's impossible. Anyone supporting my opinion? So behavioral economics says that we are telling this story about ourselves. Like, we're slightly more intelligent than most people, and we're, you know, kind of more aware of societal issues, and I kind of, you know, we follow things more with a more precise eye than most people. And if the story, or if the message, or the brand, or the organization fits and supports that story that we tell about ourselves, they are influential. And the last point is someone able to erase positive emotions. There is a lot of negative thinking going on, not only in society, but also in the media, and also in our friendship circles as well. And it's not just that it used to not be that way. It's always been that way. For some reason, our brain picks up negative messages more than it picks up positive messages. We assign more weight to negative things. So if you have a long event and there's one thing that goes wrong during that whole event, the only thing we remember is that one thing that went wrong and not the 25 million things that were actually super perfect. And that's how our brain is wired. So we are going through this world in a constant need of positive enforcement, positive support. And when somebody is able to do a positive uplifting thing in our stream or feed, it's influential because we crave that positive dopamine rush that comes from reading a friend's answer to a message or a funny cat spinning the fidget spinner video, which, yes, I personally shared that last week. Thought it was funny. But if you start analyzing the issue arenas, what are the things you would be looking at? So you would first of all be looking at the topic itself, the issue-related aspects. What is the context in which this discussion is done? What are the characteristics, the special things about this issue? Then you would be looking at the actors. Who are the characteristics, or what are the characteristics of the actors? What are they? Who do they represent? Whose voice do they have? And what kind of roles do they have in the debate? Then you would probably analyze places of interaction. So how are the media related to this? What kind of interrelated? Where is the discussion flowing? Where are they getting their sources from? Who are they referring to? And then you would go and analyze, look at the course of the debate. So what are the outcomes? What kind of communication strategies could be involved? So when you're talking about an issue arena, you are analyzing all of these things. You are looking at who is there to talk. Who are the publics, the stakeholders? And if you want to differentiate between public and stakeholder, usually a public arises for a certain topic. So, for example, when they threaten to take the mustard company, Turun Sinappi, out of Turku, Finland, that caused a huge ordeal in Finland, and it rose a pro-Sinappi public, very focused on one topic. You do not move my mustard factory out of Finland. It's a true story. And when you talk about stakeholders, it's more long-term. It's something that you have a stake in, and we'll go to the definition of a stakeholder soon, but it's a continuous relationship with the stakeholders. And then instead of just thinking of an organization and its own audience, there's always competitors in this environment. And the competitors are not just primary competitors, so a car maker and other car makers, but the competition is increasingly secondary, where you actually have other things competing for people's time, not necessarily cars, but maybe even hobbies or something else who is taking away from one thing. This is how we see in corporate communication the world and the organizations. Every single organization that is established or starts, even before it has done anything, before it has even communicated anything to individuals or groups or come up with any nice products or anything, automatically, just by establishing it, it automatically attracts some people. Some people think it's great. And automatically, the same thing, the same company, same corporation, detracts some people. Some people just dislike it for severe reasons. It's not necessarily known what they are. And the organization only works if it is charged. So if the internal communication is working, if there is a current going through. And just like organizations, the battery has a time when it needs to be recharged or replaced or even merged with other organizations or batteries. And putting 10 dead batteries together does not make a good battery. So organizational structures and mergers are often processes that are very, very complicated. But let's start with what's on the inside. Nothing works on the outside if the inside world of employees and organizational communication is not working. This used to not be the problem, because it used to be that the employees, they got paid and they could complain in all the piece that they wanted to. But now we have all kinds of forums and platforms where the employees, whatever they say, they can actually become a central interest to the media or become a media of themselves, where people actually trust the employees, individual employees, and their experiences and stories more than they trust what the corporate website says. So when you think about how do we lead communication in an organization, the first thing is always to think about how happy are the employees? How well are we doing internally? Because before you don't get the employees to do and understand what you're doing there, it doesn't help if you do lots of fantastic campaigns on the outside. Because at worst, your campaigns will just aggravate people if they are the opposite of what the actual experience of the employees is. And this is something that when we are doing nice projects or campaigns, we sometimes forget. We always have to know what the real experience is like. Because if there is a message and an experience and they don't match, people always, always go with the experience. It doesn't matter if it's your own experience. It can be the experience of somebody you met, somebody you heard online, somebody you read about, or somebody who just happens to know somebody who said that. It's so much more powerful, the e-word of mouth, what people share and tell each other. So let's look at who are the stakeholders and how do we actually define a stakeholder. The idea of stakeholder comes from the difference that we had to make from shareholders. Because previously we thought, who has a voice in an organization? It's the people who invested money in it. And that was the shareholder thinking. If you pay, you have a voice. Now in this environment, in this changing communication environment that organizations are today in, shareholder business is just one tiny part of it. They're just one tiny group to worry about. And it's a situation where we're finding ourselves surrounded by different groups and different publics wanting different things. And our definition of stakeholder, and in the book you will find something quite similar, but maybe a bit broader, is that those groups any groups influencing an organization or being influenced by the organization are stakeholders. That means that you are a stakeholder of several things, not just University of Jyväskylä because you are a student here, but you might be a stakeholder of the Kortepohja student village because you happen to live there, and that might also make you a stakeholder of the K-supermarket that you drive by when you are coming this way, because the K-supermarket is on your way, and even having somebody as a neighbor or passing somebody could be a potential stake that you hold. For example, if they come up with a renewal project that hinders your way to the university every morning and you are late because of their renewal project and you have to go around the street and that disturbs your life, it means that you can actually become a potential stakeholder. So the thinking that we're moving from shareholder, those who have invested in money, to now thinking that everybody can have a stake in an organization. And this is, it's kind of a challenging situation for many organizations because they're used to the fact that, well, we have the shareholders, then we have the customers, and they sometimes think about the employees, and then we have the potential customers and competitors, but that's pretty much it, or the regulators. But in this environment, all of the stakeholder roles can change. Somebody who is a shareholder can sell their stock and no longer be a shareholder, and they can just become an activist, for example. Or the other way around, somebody who strongly opposes the organization can actually end up buying their stock and then become a shareholder. So in this environment, you don't necessarily know what the people are like. So you can't have strategic communication messages to all the different groups. You have to have a synchronic, you have to have an integrated message of what the organization is. What is the organization known for that resonates in all of the different groups as well? So let's look at the different stakeholders then in our battery picture. So the most positive ones are the faith holders. They are here in the positive end of the spectrum. And those are the positively engaged stakeholders who trust and like the organization and actually are willing to support it. So that's all the fans, all the loyal customers, all the employees who don't want to change their employee, all the people who actually have a positive image about the thing. And the thing is, the faith holders in this kind of a dynamic environment are the ones who end up supporting the whole organization if things go wrong. So in crisis times, say the CEO does or says something stupid, what do people believe? The CEO's individual statement? Or, for example, an individual employee who works there and says, it's not that bad, he was just joking. Usually they believe the little guy over the big guy. And the faith holders, they are the supporters of the organization, but they are not just passive. In the previous years, it's become more and more evident that the faith holders, they want something. Not only do they want to be heard, they want to be acknowledged, to have a platform where to share their thoughts and ideas. They want to be able to be praised or even engaged in decision-making. They become even more loyal fans if you get them involved, the positive ones. And here I have an example of an Audi fan club, for example, where people come up with their own fan clubs online, for example, where they discuss with fellow people who have this one thing, just like me, people like me, for example, a love for Audis. And then we have the negative, the hate holders, the negatively engaged stakeholders who dislike or hate the brand or even harm it via their behaviors, often resulting from anger. And good news for you is that we have an expert on the hate holders among us because Matias Lievonen is doing his doctoral dissertation on hate holders and different forms of negative engagement. So if this is your pie, then make sure to talk to him about this. Now, hate holders, Matias and I have worked up this wonderful description of different categories of hate holding. So it doesn't mean that if you dislike something, you're automatically a hate holder. Actually, many hate holders are faith holders, and they just need to be acknowledged and somehow recompensed. So when there is a negative experience that is the fault of the organization, say they give you a wrong product, or the product is faulty in some way. If they don't respond to you or recompensate your product and somehow make you feel that the process is solved, it might be that they start becoming an activist and start actively harming your organization. But if you do acknowledge that, you may gain a faith holder. So these groups are not static. It doesn't mean that once you are a hate holder, that's the group you can't fix. Sure, there might be some trolling groups, for example, whom you can't fix. But many of them are just waiting to be recompensed or negotiated back to positive side. And actually, this is a mental cognitive process that is so strong that some of the companies in the US, there's actually a business where you provide customers of a good product with a little negative experience to be able to provide them with a positive experience of solving that negative emotion. Because studies show that you are more tied and more loyal to an organization or brand that has fixed your problem than you are to an organization or brand who never had problems to begin with. Because our negative processing, our brains pick up the negative process, and if somebody helps alleviate us of this negative pain, we are very attached to that person. So, hate holders. An example of this is... Let me see if I can click this. I didn't dare to do that in the first group, but yes, I can do that. Here we go. So this is a Audi driver who was upset with how Audi, the importer, was dealing with the problems with his car. So he had his own car glued. So he had these texts written on his car, and he parked it in front of an Audi dealer. And it says, this car produces or burns up oil this much, and this does your car burn up too much, and the renovation is going to cost 6,500 euros, and the importer refuses to, pay me this. This is hate-holding activism. Now imagine how much trouble this is going to cause the Audi dealer when everybody who comes to the Audi dealership reads this message before they come in. So the hate holder has hijacked the whole brand experience before you even go to the dealer where they can start their wonderful talk and provide you with coffee or chocolate. So this is serious business, this negative engagement and hate holding. Let's see. Back to present. Yes. So what do the hate holders want? It depends whether you are actually a hate holder who has a bad experience. If you are, then they usually want acknowledgement, recompense, some kind of a negotiation. If you are on the worst side of the hate holding thing, you might just want honor in your own trolling group. Just want to have some medals of honor of how well you've trolled others, so it might not be something that the organization can fix. Now, in addition to these two groups, there is also another active group arising, and that is the fake holders. This can be anything from opinions, social boards, stakeholder, or anything that is artificially generated. So this is not real, but it's fake. Generated personas or softwares or algorithms that actually look like they are people supporting an issue or phenomenon or dissupporting it. And what do they want? They want to manipulate or distort or question. And we talk about meat puppets or sock puppets. Meat puppet is a person, for example, in social media, pretending to be somebody that they are not. And sock puppet is a person who is running several different profiles. And they're done very well nowadays, so you can't necessarily always tell which profile is fake and which profile is real, especially when they are networked with real people. So some people are not aware of the fake profiles that there exist, and they may even copy profiles of other existing real people, so you don't really know where this influence is going and coming. But this is something that is an alarming thing going on in our society that organizations and brands have to deal with. They are the ones that are truly happy, they are the ones that are truly mad, and then there are the ones that actually are trying to influence the whole game without really revealing who they really are. Now, how does this work out? If the organization has a case where there is more happy and trusting stakeholders, you don't really have a problem with the fake holders and the hate holders, because the positive experiences are so strong that they override everything that's going on. And in this kind of a dynamic environment, these kind of faith holders may save your business. An interesting example comes from IKEA in Canada. There was a we could call it a troll or a claim. A lady said, yes, I went to the local IKEA and they refused to let me nurse my child there. So breastfeeding, big thing nowadays. And if you want to look for a group that gets really aggravated really quickly, it's the mommy bloggers. They're a fearful group. And the mommy bloggers got really upset about this message. But before IKEA's monitoring tools even picked up the whole thing, faith holders stepped in. The local IKEA customers who really support this brand started answering this rumor and started looking, this doesn't sound like IKEA at all. This is, I mean, for goodness sake, they have brand promise of, you know, making life easier for children. I mean, they have baby diaper changing tables everywhere and toys in the store and kid meals and everything. And the faith holders started looking into the issue and they found out it was a fake claim. So before IKEA, the company, was even able to monitor that such a discussion is going on about them, the faith holders had stepped in, solved the problem, made the troll look bad, and moved on. So in the ideal case, your brand and organization could depend on the faith holders, even in the fake holder stuff. So if you have a case where you have faith holders and hate holders, equal number, that means that there starts to be a discussion, a rapid discussion in the media or on the different issue arenas that we have, whether this organization should exist. Does it serve a purpose? Is it ethical or is it unethical? Should it be able to be there? Should we, you know, just not allow this to happen in our society? And this means that the organization cannot really do good branding or communication or marketing because it's all the time fighting the legitimacy challenge. So if there is a way to try to maintain the situation where you have more faith holders than hate holders, that is ideal. And then, of course, if you have more hate holders, as in the last example, then your legitimacy, so your license to exist, so the general acceptance of your company, it's very challenged. It might even be the final draw to the whole group. We have a course book, and it is this book. And course books are always not perfect because they are written usually by one person who is coming from one discipline and they see things in their way. This is the best we thought in the market at the moment. This is out actually 2 months ago. But there are certain differences of what we are teaching here in the lectures and then what is in the corporate, in this Cornelissen's book. And those, well, not differences, but there's just little different emphasis, and that's what we're going to figure out in this picture. So the first thing is, we started out with society. We talked about society. Cornelissen talks about the market. So he's focused on that exchange area, where you have the stakeholders that are potential customers and their interaction. In corporate communication, we also have to think about the negative side. We also have to think about the fake holders. We have to talk about the hate holders. So Cornelissen uses these concepts that we put up here. So we put them into the order that we think they relate to the battery model. So in the positive side, in the faith holder area, we have the investor relations. Those are the shareholders. They're the ones who actually put money into it. So they're the ones who actually heavily invested. Then we have sponsorship, for example, that he talks about, and publicity or public relations, where you have the goodwill generation. Then you have the sales promotion that's going on in the positive side, and direct marketing, advertising. So if you're going to attend the basic studies of marketing, you will most possibly just focus on the positive side of this thing. In corporate communication, we cannot afford to just look at the positive side because we need to look into the future. What kind of groups will activate and how will they harm the sales, not just the ongoing sales. So what's up in the neutral area? In the neutral area, we have digital communication, community relations. We have public affairs, which is related to lobbying a little, or government relations as well. And we have media relations. And actually here today with us is Salla Syvänen, who is the new doctoral student of corporate communication. And she's coming from Yle Jyväskylä. And she will be teaching media relations to you if you are doing the basic on the master level, no, BA level course on media relations in the spring. So we could say that the media relations is more towards the negative side of the corporation or the brand because of the news criteria. See, media follow certain criteria of what they report about brands and organizations. And if you have an organization that was able to hire 50 people or let go of 50 people, the news criteria determine that they report the case where they let go 50 people. Remember our brain thinking about the negative? Kind of similar with the media. So in that way, many of the organizations who are writing, in their own opinion, fantastic press releases, which is kind of like a letter to the media, why you should make a story about us, what is important to us, they often focus on the good things of the organization, but they forget that the media logic is to cover the things that are going on, that are urgent, that are surprising, that are relevant, that are close by, that affect a lot of people, that are negative. So this kind of media relationship is placed in the neutral to negative area in that way. And in the most negative end of hate holders is crisis communication. How do you survive in an environment when something has already gone wrong? And crisis communication as well as issues management. What are issues? They are topics, conversational topics or ideas, or maybe even people, somebody who is making a big deal out of something, for example. And the idea is if you follow and identify an issue that is raising up in society, for example, the environmentally friendly business, that's what became an issue about 15 years ago or so, and if you were able to figure that out quickly enough, you were able to take part in the conversation and start developing your brand and organization towards a more environmentally friendly direction. But if you missed it, you might have become an example of a bad or lost case, lost issue in that sense. But let's look at the media world. This is the Finnish version. Let's go to the English version. So when we are talking about brands and organizations, what on earth are they talking about when we are looking at media world? Well, the most traditional way, and the bigger the bubble, the more it's used at the moment. The most traditional way is to think about earned media, and this is the legacy media. So this is print, broadcast, net, and so TV, radio, newspapers, magazines, that kind of world. And the way to do media relations in that way is to have stories and have narratives that are interesting enough for the media to match their own criteria and write a story about it. So the outcome of the media relations is usually a story or a product or an article or something like that. And that's still pretty common because in Finland, especially compared to other parts of the world, print media is pretty appreciated here still. Then another big bubble in the often used media formats for brands and organizations is the owned media. Now, the difference with the earned media, where media writes the story, is that in the earned media, you have no control what they end up writing. You can send them stories about how you employed 50 people and how happy these 50 people are and how your CEO is a fantastic person and likes sailing and there should be a story about the CEO sailing to the future of 50 fantastic new employees chanting in the ground background or something like that. But the media will come up with their own agenda about the topic. And they will have their own questions that they think that the big public is asking and that they want answered. Whereas when you're looking at that corporate website, for example, so the owned media, you have total control what you put in there. Now, the difficult thing is when all these different media formats don't tell a similar story. That's a challenge. So what corporate communication people are trying to do is to make the story, the corporate experience, and the corporate story so strong that it's actually resonating in all the different media formats, in all the different platforms, similar enough to be credible. Because if everybody's telling a different story, who are you going to believe in the end? and it doesn't really give a consistent picture of the organization, and you find it very hard to trust it. So owned media, websites, for example, or platforms, or even other areas where you control the discussion. And then we have the traditional paid media. This is pure advertising. You pay for space, and you can put the message that you want, and it appears exactly under your control. Then bigger bubbles that are coming up is the shared media. So this is the social media context, for example. This can be posts and arguments and stuff. And this appears to be non-controlled, but actually social media is often taken as a form of paid media nowadays because there's a lot of advertising going on there. And it's also quite corrupt. So it doesn't mean that it's an honest opinion anymore. There's a lot of guidelines for employees and brands of what they can and should be sharing. So it's not that necessarily as authentic as it used to be. Same goes for searched media. So this is about search results in different formats. And that used to be very controlled as well because it was only a couple of organizations doing their SEO and you actually got what you were looking for. But as this is as the competition grows, so also does the diversity of answers that you're getting. So if you do search engine optimization, yes, you can control this format as well, but it's also that everybody else is doing SEO and everybody else is also looking for their search keywords, so it's not necessarily something that you can that well control. So these are the often used. The green ones are the often used ones. Earned media, the stories and editorials. Paid media, the advertising that you buy. Owned media, the things that you have going on the corporate side, on the websites and stuff. Shared media, what your employees and what your customers, what your stakeholders are posting in the social web. And then search results, what people are finding about you in the Google. Those are the often used. But we argue that there's actually three new emerging things coming up. And one of them at the bottom is, let's start with the rented media. So when corporations are hiring a video blogger to do an analysis of one of their products, for example, that is called rented media because they are renting that video blogger's audience for their own product. Not that controlled, depending on the case. And if you control it more, then it'll probably be less credible. Mind media. This is about the data that is available about the organization, and it can be anything from spreadsheets of salaries that somebody accidentally in HR posted online in a non-safe environment that you can actually find if you Google the organization's name and a PDF or XLS or something else like that, that the company is often not even aware of. But this might also be stuff and data produced from annual reports that you can very well produce and find a different story. So this is something that is used in tutkiva journalismi. So what would that be in English? Investigative journalism. Yes. And then we also have a new thing, which is called the hijacked media. And the product of that might be, for example, a hashtag. So when somebody takes a hashtag that was originally intended by a brand and organization for a fun and nice and uplifting social purpose, and uses it for something else. So, for example, when McDonald's did their fantastic MD stories, expecting people to show their Happy Meals in nice scenarios, it ended up being very sad people of, you know, at the trash, looking at the pictures, looking at the trash of McDonald's, and unhappy employees posting and ranting about their experiences. So somebody who is using an existing stream or media for their own purpose. But this can be also used for the better, in a way, because the idea is that there is only a certain amount of attention in the society. And if you can use that attention that is going on for your own brand and organization to answer questions that your stakeholders have, good for you. So, for example, when sad things happen, or such as, you know, a celebrity, for example, going bankrupt and having to sell their luxury mansion in the Beverly Hills area, if you are a used handbag company, you could advertise to that celebrity's Twitter account that will buy your bags, and you will get a lot of publicity for that. So sometimes you have to also be very monitoring and cleverly looking around of what's going on in society that your brand or organization could hijack or jump into or use. Of course, there are laws of ethics that you have to follow in this, and this can be done in a good way, or this can be done also in a very bad way. And the thing is, however you do business, however you conduct business, if you choose to go the unethical way from the beginning, it will carry you for some time, but eventually it will turn up in your reputation. So even though you don't guarantee quick results making the ethical choice, what is right for most people, what is right for the society, what is right to do for the customers, what is their right to know, in the end, it will pay you back. Let's see. So before I give the floor to Matthias, who tells you how to pass this class and what all is expected of you, let's look at what the future of communication is like. And this is something that I am teaching also tomorrow at the Marketing Week to the people who graduated from this program. So I think this is relevant for both people working and people studying. Let's see if you agree. Future communication, say 5 to 10 years from now, what are we looking at? What kind of communication should we be producing at that point? First of all, there's going to be more competition of space and time and platforms and attention. So that means that you have to utilize the most efficient channels. And at the moment, it looks like they are visual. When you have an option of watching a video about something or seeing an image of something or reading a long text about something, you often go for the video or the image. And this is also true for brands and organizations. If they are able to produce a video about something, it gives a more thorough view of something that you're interested in. So it's visual. It's also pulled, meaning that it's not something that the organization puts out there, a lot of information in their websites, but it's something that is found via keywords. It's something that you can access when you have a question. So some of you have gone through the orientation weeks. You've been from class to class and they pour out a lot of information on you. That's push communication, right? So they push this stuff on you and they expect you to absorb it and select and put it in your different brain parts, and then when you need it, to pull it out. Pull communication would be that when you have a question, there is a bot or something that picks up your question, and the bot does the work for you and finds you 5 different suitable related articles or that answer that challenge, for example. So something, information that can be pulled at the time when you need it the most. Also, it is optimized, meaning that you don't need the information necessarily in every single context. You need it at a certain place, at a certain topic. Also, when you think about optimization, it might be that the same message is unoptimal for the same stakeholder in a different time period, or the same or the different customer. Then future communication is engaging. These new publics, the box turners and their friends, they want to be involved. They're not just passively using. They pick some of the brands that they like, and they usually like to have some kind of an influence or interaction, or at least meet some people online who also like this to build their own identity. That means that for the positive faith holders, you need an engagement. You need engagement with them. You need some kind of a platform or way to interact. At the same time as the hate holders are self-selecting themselves into these kind of discussion groups. It's shareable. So the future communication is something that people want to give forward to other people. Say, this is the content, this is the advertising that I found. I thought this was really funny, and have it easily shared and given out to others as well. Emotion enabling, and this is something that Salla might tell you more about in her course also, because even news today have to have an element where the readers and the watchers or the listeners comment and think and relate back to it. Oh, this makes me feel sad. Or this, I am upset about this. Because sharing nowadays is all about building your identity. And if you don't have a chance to add your own emotion to things you share, such as links and stories, you look for other ways to share your emotion. Supporting. So yes, supporting the aims and the things we need to do, not just agenda that they want to sell and push on you. Snacks, short, tasty, pulled in whenever you want, not full meals, unfortunately, but more like snacks, in bubbles. Yes, remember how we are in the foam society? We are in our own little communication media bubbles. And every bubble, the same message may look differently. It might come out to have a different meaning in every single bubble. Answering the individual's next question. So not just filling their current need, but also guiding them in the right direction and creating the right expectations. You might say that every customer complaint or every employee complaint is mismatched expectation management or bad expectation management because for some reason they thought this would be provided. Right, let's go on to Matthias then so he can fill you in on how this course proceeds.
Okay. Can you hear me up there in the last row? Awesome. So, good afternoon. As you already heard, my name is Matthias Lievonen. I'm a project researcher and a doctoral student at the Jyväskylä University School of Business and Economics at the discipline of corporate communication. And basically, I will now give you all the necessary information you need to get through this course. So, it could be found in this very pretty presentation I will now show you. I guess most of you guys got the email I sent you yesterday. There is a link to this presentation, as well as to the Moodle workspace of this course. So those two links are relatively important for you because through those you can find all the necessary information. If you don't get those links, I will show them to you here. And if you miss them eventually after this lecture as well, just email me and I will give you the links. So no problem with that. Few words about the lectures. This is the number one lecture, and we will have five more coming up. During the September, we will see you on Tuesdays, 10:15. And as you already know, we have joint lectures with the Finnish version of this course. However, all the lectures are in English. The exam language differs in these two courses, but I will tell you more about that in just a little bit. And the exam date is on Friday, 20th of October, and there are actually two retake exams as well available. First retake exam or REST exam will be held on November 24th, and the second retake exam possibility is on 15th of December, and I believe it will begin at the same time on that very day. 12:15. But you will find the correct information on the Korppi page of the course. So this is the same page you registered for this course, and you will find all the necessary dates, and if there are any changes on the schedule, they will be updated on this Korppi page as well. So we will have six lectures, 19 minutes each. Here are the topics. Basically, this is the number one lecture, but from the second lecture on, we will hold this lecture together with Kaisa. Kaisa already left, but you met her in the beginning of this lecture. The topics of these lectures, they will be updated, so these are might not be the final ones, but they give you a clue what will be included in each lecture. And Kaisa will help the lecture number three. Excuse me. I will help the lecture number four. dealing with social media and corporate communication. On lecture 5, I will be here, but we will also have a visiting lecturer, Hanna Reinikainen, from our discipline, and she will tell you something about the new media relations, and this is a very interesting topic, so I really encourage you to come to the lecture or look at it from Moniviestin, because you're able to do it because we videotape or video record these lectures, but I will also tell you something about that later on. And last, the sixth lecture will be held by me and Kaisa again. But again, these are just to give you a clue what will be included. There will be much more to come in these lectures as well. So, this is the link I sent you yesterday in the email. Basically, you just have to click this Moodle link, log in with your University of Jyväskylä credentials, and then add an enrollment key, which is there. It's corp.com. So use lowercase letters and put it in a row, corp.com. And you just have to add this enrollment key only once. So when you have done it, and next time you log in the Moodle with your credentials, you should be find the course on the listings of the courses, and no need for adding the enrollment key again. Moniviestin is the place where you can find the video recordings of this course. So basically, after each lecture, we will add the recordings as soon as possible, depending on how quickly the IT team of the university are able to add the videos there. But I will put the links on each lecture's videos to Moodle, and I will also add them to this Prezi presentation as well. So basically, you will be able to find the recordings relatively easy. However, if there are some access codes or anything like that needed, I will also let you know. But I guess that you don't need any codes, and I will give you direct links to these videos. So that was all about the workspaces and lectures. I will now give you a brief presentation about the exam instructions and also about the bonus exercises that will add to your grade. Wilma showed you the book, which is Cornelissen. This is 5th edition, and it's a brand new book. Arrived a couple of months ago. Basically, what you need in course exam is the book. We got topics in the exam from there. We will also add some questions related to the lectures. Of course, they are related to book and lectures. They go hand in hand, but in some cases there are some things in the lectures that are not included in the book, so that's why it's very important for you to follow the lectures as well. And we will have a multiple choice exam, including 40 questions. Basically, the maximum of the exam is 40 points. If you choose the right option, you get 1 point. If you choose wrong option, you get minus 0.5 points. And you also had a chance to choose I don't know option when you get 0 points. So basically, if you're unsure, it might be a more safe way to do if you really don't know the answer. And this is also an important part. I think some of you have registered either the TIS course, which is YTTP 2150, Introduction to Corporate Communication. We will have joint lectures with the course YTTP 1150, Viestinnän johtamisen perusteet, which is the same course but in Finnish. So basically, we have joint lectures, But in case you want to do the exam in Finnish, you should enroll only to the course YTTP 1150. So in case you want to do the exam in Finnish, enroll to that course. And important is also that you enroll only one of these courses. So you don't need to enroll both of these. The only way to or if you want to do the exam in Finnish, choose the other one. And if you want to do the exam in English, choose this very course. So this is very important. And if you have already enrolled to both of the courses, please cancel your registration from the other. And this is the final part, but also important if you want to get easy points, I would say. The bonus exercises, there are two parts in this bonus exercise, what we will ask from you. So basically, they are two short questionnaires. The part one is actually already opened. It is related to corporate communication topic, and the part one in this case asks you something about your own personal experiences related to some service or shopping experiences what you've got. And basically the part one is very easy to answer. At the end of this questionnaire part one, there is a box where you have to sort of relate to the course literature as well. But even though you might need some knowledge on the literature, it is not difficult to fill or to do. So I will highly recommend you to take a look on the part one already because it is open. The part one will be opened from September 18th. And basically, part two. From September 18th, and you will be answer both of these bonus exercises until October 6th this very year. So basically, when you have passed part one and part two, just send me an email so I know that you have done those. And by doing that, you will be able to upgrade your exam and upgrade your grade total in this course by 0.5 points. And as Vilma already told you, it means that if you got, for example, grade 2 from exam and you get through the bonus exercises, the grade of this course will round up to 3 and so on. So that was pretty much all about the general information related to course. If you have any questions, please send me an email. I will answer to them as soon as possible. You know, if there are any other questions you want to ask now, feel free to do it. You can also come after the lecture and have a chat with us. But that was pretty much all at this point.
Yeah, so welcome to corporate communication. See you next week.